For those of you who don't know me, I'm a PhD student at the University of Utah in biomedical informatics and worked at the State Health Department in Utah for many years, and at ASTO, the association that represents state health departments. And as Deborah was speaking, all these videotapes kept running through my head about connections and immunization registries. And it's kind of interesting that, well, a couple things are kind of interesting to me right now. Is first of all, there are many of you out in the audience that are much greater experts at some of these topics than I am, and probably you should be giving the talk I'm going to give, but I guess since I'm the one that wrote the abstract. The second thing is how far we've come in information systems. And the third thing is, when I looked at this agenda, I thought, how does this topic fit with the other two presentations? And the light went on, and I think I got it. So we heard Sean talk about data users. How do you keep the data, what was the word, originators, data originators. How do you keep the data originators happy? And I love this term about turgonertia. Is that how you say it? I've never heard that. I've learned two great words this conference, faith-based epidemiology and turgonertia. Those are both really useful terms. I'm not really sure what the system's doing. I can give this without my slides, but it won't be as interesting. Could somebody here from the conference know how to get my slides up here? I do have them on a USB drive if we need to punt.
It's on. Close that. That's just the Explorer window.
Oh, here we go. But okay. So before I start, I want to thank my collaborators. And this is a little odd for me, because usually I'm the one that does the broad brushstroke, you know, the high-level global kinds of ideas. And today I'm doing something that's relevant to the first two speakers, but it's a very narrow, small, deep piece of building information systems. And I'm going to use a specific project as an example. And I'd like to thank my collaborators on that project. The project that I'll be talking about is funded by the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, and we're looking at implementing an electronic medical record with a personal health record in rural clinics to see if it increases communication between patients and physicians. And so that's the context of the example that I'm going to use. And we have a large group of collaborators on that project. But they didn't all work on the usability test, which we'll be talking about. So, usability. The business case and some of the other information that the Public Health Informatics Institute works on talks about requirements, definitions, talk about understanding the data flow, the data needs. And you need to have all that before you start building a system. I think Dave says, build logically before you build physically. Know what your system needs to do and say before you actually build it. Well, usability comes in after you've done your requirements and after you've done some of your coding and you actually have a tool to put in front of people to test. And if, in fact, information systems are about the users, about the programs, maybe it's important to build them systems that they can actually use, that they actually can understand and can get information out of. So Jacob Nielsen, who's sort of a usability guru, says there's the first rule of usability testing is don't listen to your users. Watch them. Pay attention to what they do. And in usability testing, there are a lot of tools like Moray. You hook it to your computer, it can videotape and record what the users are doing at the keyboard. But the idea is, what they do speaks louder than what they say about how an information system works. I think the term immunization registry is symbolic of where we've come. We now call them information systems, and that's for a reason. It's because they're no longer typewriters that store data in a black box instead of a file cabinet. They actually can do more than just put data in, there's a lot of decision support tools that can help the person who is going to be using the computer, and it's no longer just a data entry function. I mean, managers sit and get data out of computer systems. They actually support the decisions that we make in public health. And so it's important that those systems can actually be used by the people who need the information and put the information in. So my goals for today are to share with you what I believe is the importance of usability testing, and this has come hard from actually participating in usability testing and watching the difference it can make. Can I see from a show of hands how many of you actually conducted a usability test? Oh, wow. Conducted them. Great. How many of you participated in a usability test? Well, I probably don't have much I can teach you. You probably can ask me some tough questions when we get through. For the rest of you, I'd like to encourage you to try to have the systems that you're working with be usability tested. I'm not an expert, and you don't need to be to do usability testing either. It's just important to know that it's an important part of the process and to insist on it. And I'd also like to persuade you that it's really a doable process, that you don't have to have a $20,000 two-month contractor to come in and do your usability testing, that you can do small-scale useful usability testing to identify if the system is actually going to be helpful. So my mantra is, if it isn't used, it isn't useful. Also, the information that I'm going to provide is not a cookbook. I'm not going to try to teach you how to do usability testing, but I can recommend some resources, and this is a book that I find is really easy cookbook for usability testing for those of you who want to try to do it but don't have a lot of resources. It's the Handbook of Usability Testing by Rubin and, I don't know, Chisnell, is that how you say it? Have any of you used this? Okay, so what is usability testing? It's the bringing together of the system and the user, the cognition of making the system work for you. It's the fit between users, their tasks, and their systems. Nielsen, the usability guru that I was talking about earlier, talks about the usability of a system deals with its quality attributes. And the main theme is obviously improving ease of use, and to build that into the design of the system. So why? Because it improves productivity. 10% of a design project's budget should be on usability testing. The first Robert Wood Johnson grant I had required 25% of the budget to go to training. And I thought that was really progressive and really innovative to actually, require training as part of the grant. And now this idea of actually building funding in for usability testing as part of the requirement for the grant, I think it's a really great idea. So what are usability heuristics, the rules of thumb about what makes a system usable, visibility of system status, where are you in the system, the match between the system and the real world, is the system doing what the user expects it to actually do, does the user have control and freedom? Is there consistency throughout the whole system? Like if you hit F12, does F12 do the same thing on every screen? And are there tools built into the system to prevent error or to allow the user to correct errors? I'm not going to read through the rest of this list. It's just seeming to me that after these two really global presentations, now we're getting really detailed. The next two slides are of a specific test that you could use. This is a very simple heuristic evaluation tool that you could actually take the way it is and go test a system with it just by using these 14 questions. Match between the system and the real world, consistency and standards, visibility of system state, so does the user know where they are in the system on the screen? Minimalist designs were applicable, and aesthetic design that really simpler is better than fancier if it does what it needs to do. To memorize the memory load, the user shouldn't have to remember everything, that the system should just be obvious. informative feedback, so the user's actually interacting with the computer system. Flexibility and efficiency, good error messages so that the person actually understands what they did wrong. I don't know, have you ever gotten those Microsoft error messages, number 374 billion, and you don't know what it means? Undo, so you can reverse a mistake. Clear closure, so that the user knows when the task is completed. Speak the user's language. I think that you mentioned that earlier, Sean, that it's really important for the people designing the system to learn to speak the user's language as opposed to the user having to always be the one to learn the programmer's language. Giving the user control and help and documentation that actually real people can understand. Okay, so cautions. Usability testing may need to vary by the purpose of the system. So it's important to pay attention to what needs to be done by the user and what needs to be learned by the user. What does the user want to get out of the computer system or the information system? The level of the expertise that they have in using computers. So if you're doing a usability testing for people that have been, you know, using Facebook since they were two, it's going to be a little bit different than some of us, like Dave Ross said, his mother, 90s, using Facebook. I mean, her computer skills are probably a little bit different than, say, my son, or hopefully when I have grandchildren. And then, of course, the level of their subject matter expertise. Someone who's new to immunizations is going to interact with an immunization information system a little bit different than someone who's been doing it for 20 years. Okay, so people come to a computer system with an assumption. They assume that the system will help them do the required task. It's kind of like you said, duh. Why is that so difficult? I mean, why isn't that assumption built into information systems? Well, one of my observations is, in public health, we are so thankful to have a new system that actually gets implemented after we've paid $20 billion to have it built. That if it does what it's supposed to do, we're happy. We don't care if it's efficient. We don't care if we understand it. We're just happy to have it installed. But that's not really enough, because users really have a right to assume that it's going to work for them. So the criteria that we used in our usability testing was, is it going to help the patient, because it was a PHR, is it going to help the patient understand their medical record efficiently? Will it be user-friendly so they're not intimidated? Will it be useful? Will they be able to get information out of that system that will help them manage their own health? Do they believe it's secure, and is it secure? And those aren't necessarily always the same thing. And is it reliable? Is it going to be stable? Is it going to be there every time they want? Is their data not going to get lost? Are they going to be able to find it if they put it in? My 82-year-old mother's really cute with her computer. She puts the stuff in, and then she can't ever find where she put it. So she thinks that the computer, like, deleted her documents. So she has all the stuff in a temporary file and on the desktop. And, well, I have stuff on the desktop, too. But she can't ever go back and recover her documents. So she types them over. So what we did in our usability testing, okay, let me back up a little bit. Why did I want to do this? It's because I'd like to convince the public health world that usability testing is something we have a right to have. In fact, we should be demanding it. You don't have to have an expensive license for Moray. You don't have to bring in a big-time consultant. That there are low-cost approaches to usability testing that you can do yourself. And these are the steps that we took. We developed a script, a scenario. We brought people in from the informatics program to beta test it. We had like 30 different people beta test it in groups of 10 at a time. The real usability test was one patient at a time and one interview at a time, which is pretty expensive. But when you can bring volunteers into a computer lab or into a conference room where you have three or four computers set up, it's not so expensive that it's not doable. So then you collect the data and analyze it, and we had a focus group. One of the really important things was having the programmers there to see the users make mistakes, to hear the users what worked and what didn't, because they thought they had built a perfect system. They wouldn't have built it that way if they didn't think that it was the right way to build it. And they don't really believe kind of in their gut, in their heart, that there's something wrong with it just because you tell them. They have to actually see the user's struggle. They have to see the users not see that quit button that's at the top when the user's expecting it to be at the bottom or whatever it is. So we found with getting recruiting participants is we just asked people. And it was interesting is how many people, if they believed that their input really could make a difference to make the system useful, they were willing to. And we had 3 or 4 hours a person. And they didn't get paid for this time. They got pizza and Coke, you know. But because they wanted to try to improve the system, they were willing to participate in the test. So, these are some screenshots from the actual tool that we used. I'm going to skip through this if anybody would like to see them later, how we analyzed the data. We coded it. I want to get to the hardest part, I think, of usability testing, and that is convincing your programmers that they need to make the change. So how do you do that? How do you build usability testing into the system? Well, I think the first thing is you think about it before you build or before you buy. And the agile testing development is a good way that at the end of each phase, you do some usability testing with your super users or the people participating on the committee. I think that's an excellent approach. If you're buying a system that's already built, that's a big company that built the system, how are you going to get them? How are you going to persuade them to make changes? Well, I think you need to build it into your RFP from the very beginning before you buy your system, build in requirements for usability testing, and get the vendor to agree that they'll make certain priority changes that your users feel like they need. So before you build, before you buy. I think another solution you have to have is persistence. I think if you're going to overcome turgonertia, you have to have persistence. You have to just insist that this system has got to be usability tested. And then I think it requires some negotiation skills with your vendor, because even if they agree to it, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be really excited about changing their code, especially if they have it implemented lots of different places and they might, you know, want to have a national user group or something like that. You just have to be persistent and insist that certain changes are necessary. We had a process of prioritizing the changes, and that's what this slide's about. We came up with about 38 important changes. We had to rank them. We had to prioritize them, and we got them to do about the first 15 on the list before it would cost more money in the contract. So we ranked them. We ranked them based on problem categories. We ranked them based on how much time it would take for them to make the changes, what the comments were about doability, how hard it would be to make the change, how soon that they could make the change, both short-term or long-term goals for the system, how important the change was to get the user to accept it. Now, when you're talking about personal health records, people have a choice whether they're going to use them or not. It's a little different than an MCH system where, you know, you don't get your federal money if you don't put the data in. So a lot of times in public health, your users don't really have a choice. It's their job. They have to do it. But good quality data will come from people who like the system that they're using. Or the reverse probably is more true. If they don't like the system, if they don't understand what's going on, they're not as likely to put quality data into it. And then the final factor for us was how important was the change to achieve the study goals. And in frontline public health work, you're not probably worried about study goals, but you are worried about program mission and program goals. So I think the last two things about implementing usability testing is make sure you're at the table, continually build a working relationship with your vendor, especially if you're building, be there, be consistent with them, have a clear message, and then bring in super users. You always have a few leaders in a group. They may be formal leaders or informal leaders, probably informal leaders, that are going to help identify, hold the hands of the others, be persuasive to the vendor, be persuasive to the manager of the program that the changes need to be made. And I think that the super users can be really influential in getting usability testing to work. So here's a copy of the matrix we used, an example of it. And so I'm going to open it up to questions, but possibly maybe statements, things that, examples where some of you have done usability testing and you have some ideas about how you made it work that you'd like to share. And before I do that, I just would like to acknowledge ARC for our Access Grant, which is the project that we did this usability testing in. The project team that I mentioned at the beginning, and Heidi Kramer, who's my research partner and is somewhat of an expert at usability testing, and also Nancy Staggers, who's a nursing informatics professor at the University of Utah that's been a great mentor for me. She's published quite a bit in this area. Sue.
Hi, Laverne. Great presentation. Dean and I were having a discussion at lunch today, and it hinges on both your presentation and something that Deborah said, and even something that Sean said. And that is that a lot of these systems, when you're doing an integration or something like that, you're actually changing some of the habits, particularly of siloed public health programs going into the larger arena of integration where they're dealing with people that are not in their department, not in their space. And so there's a fine line between making something usable to old habits or making it look like what they do and trying to promote change in habits to meet the requirements of this expanded kind of thing. So would you speak a little bit to sort of that tension between trying to meet the users where they are, so to speak, but also trying to optimize the use of your new system for a broader mission and a more integrative approach?
I think that's a really great question, Sue, and I don't have an answer, but of course I'm going to try to answer it. In the usability test we did was very simple compared to what you said. I mean, we've got patients trying to use a personal health record and physicians trying to use a medical record, and to integrate the two, and you sort of have two cultures that you're mixing. You know, the office clinic is, that culture's complicated and getting them to use the EMR is difficult, but you're talking about not just integrating two cultures, but you're maybe talking about integrating 7, 10, 15 cultures. And so how do you solve that? I think it's probably a lot of tap dancing and a little bit of training, awareness, hands on the keyboard. And that's probably an iterative process because they can't get the whole big picture right away because they don't have constructs to, you know, they don't have previous experience probably to understand why it's important to have all these things integrated and linked in. And it's just more work for them. And it does change their workflow, and that's a little irritating when you have a system, and I don't mean a computer system, I mean a process system. And then all of a sudden someone's telling you you have to do it differently. It's probably a little bit of awareness, a little bit of hands on the keyboard, a little bit of awareness, a little bit of hands on the keyboard. And I'm guessing that, I'm predicting that if people actually get information back that makes their job easier, or if it gives them functions that makes their job more efficient, that they're going to be more likely to accept the change than if it's just they're sitting there putting data in and they never see anything come out. I don't know if I answered that. Do you have something you want to add to it?
Well, I thought maybe it's kind of a discussion because in some of the health department aspects, like yours was more with clinical, but within a health department, such as you described, you do have the people in their silos. They have been doing things they have also been using systems that were done in ProDot and God knows what, you know, moving into, I mean, all these little systems that they have for TB, STD, they were on something that they don't even have people to do that anymore from the outer world. So the habits, the constructs, the screen design, a lot of the stuff with those is not the same as web-based systems where you have to save or those kinds of things. So it is really not a good translation necessarily when you do something like this. So I just was wondering, you know, the usability is a great idea because I could see it also, you could observe some of those habits came from those old systems and they just start to deal with those. But on the other hand, you know, you might have to look at some systems design issues with regard to that. So I see that as a big issue in translating old public health systems into this new world.
And Deborah, you had a comment?
Well, I'm just going to say in Utah, one of the things that they've done that sort of addresses this is they make their graphic user interface the same as whatever the program's been using. So it's seamless to the end user that their system looks the same. It's all the back end stuff that's doing the fancy thing. So I think that there have been some ways that people try to me, that is a usability issue, but it also touches on how broad it can be in order to make it familiar,
right,
to people.
So it's a little naive for me to sit up here and tell you guys you should be usability testing, and I acknowledge that. It's just, you know, somebody's got to say the message out loud, and I'm really surprised. I'm pleased that so many of you raised your hands when I asked about usability testing, because I found almost nothing in the literature about usability testing in public health systems. And so I would encourage you to write up your processes. I know you're not in the business of publishing. You're in the business of delivering services. But so that we don't have to each reinvent the wheel every time we want to make a system usable, I would strongly encourage you to share your processes of how you do your usability testing and what systems you tested and what the results were with other people in public health. There was one more question. Yeah. So maybe we have to start integrating missions before we start integrating systems. So that really speaks to Sean's presentation, and people have to get something out of it. You know, what's in it for them?
And Sean,
I have one comment on that as well. If you want them to work together, bring them together before you start spending information on systems. Start saying, okay, what is it that we can get from each other? What is the mutual benefit? and have them work out in that personal dynamic what are the accommodations that we can reach before you start trying to hard code stuff and then retroactively trying to fix it. But getting the people to start working together as teams with that mentality, the common approach, the common mission, get them to working together, what information do you have that I can use, that both and approach. And I found that that works really well as far as addressing, you know, maybe 90% or 80%, and then someone has to be an adult.
I think we had one last question in the back.
Does anybody have an answer? We probably over-tested. Does anybody have a good answer for that? I think you just build it into the strategic plan. There's a couple comments here. Yeah, early and often.
Okay, I think we got time for one last question.
Okay. Question so far has been rather broad. I think ask one that's a little bit more narrow. On the issue of selection of individuals to be the subjects, if you will.
I didn't spend much time talking about that. Well, you know, we are struggling with that. We have struggled with that. We did some demographic data. We did a pretest before the usability, before they actually had their hands on the keyboard. We asked some demographic questions and some attitude questions, and it also created kind of a culture or context for the usability test. Then we put them in front of the keyboard. We gave them a script. We watched what they did. They were supposed to enter certain stuff and accomplish certain tasks. And then we gave them a post-test that asked some of the same usability questions about attitudes, but we had the demographics. And so then we were able to sort the data by the type of user, both subject matter and computer experience, and we had to sort of make up our own justification for what was in what category. And then we had to go negotiate with the vendor about the majority of the people who would be using it, how expensive the change was, what the cost or risk to the project was if we didn't make the change. I mean, some changes are killers. If 80% of your users can't find the save button, that's a killer. It's a showstopper. But if we'd like it purple instead of blue, you know, I mean, maybe it's a red-green colorblind color. That's a showstopper. But purple or blue, if it's just preference, those are the kinds of things you trade off. So I think it has to be the low-hanging fruit. That's kind of a glib answer, but where do you get the most bang for your buck? What's the purpose of your system, and who are the majority of users, and where's your biggest risk if it doesn't work for them? And you do a matrix, and you just sort of have to calculate that out. You're smiling. I don't, don't know if you agree or disagree with that answer.
Thanks, Laverne.